Blog Talk Radio.
Come on, everybody, put your hands together. It's got to get better. All over the world, listen to these words. People come.
People come.
People go.
People go.
Your life has been.
Your life has been.
Out of control.
Out of control.
You're confused.
You're confused.
But don't worry.
Don't worry. Your song, it will get better.
It's got to get
better.
In the Word with your host, the Reverend Ellen Jacob. Let's give her a hand as she comes to the mic at this time.
Well,
Well, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you on this afternoon, April afternoon in New York. After the earthquake on the East Coast, here we are. And let's start our program with a psalm, as we usually do. And, of course, it's Psalm 91, Abiding in the Shadow of the Almighty. This is our psalm where we are become reassured that we are under the protection of the Almighty. He who dwells in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. I will say of the Lord, He is my refuge and my fortress, my God. In Him I will trust. Surely he shall deliver you from the snare of the fowler and from the perilous pestilence. He shall cover you with his feathers, and under his wings you shall take refuge. His truth shall be your shield and buckler. You shall not be afraid of the terror by night, nor of the arrow that flies by day, nor the pestilence that walks in darkness, nor the destruction that lays waste at noonday. 1,000 may fall at your side, and 10,000 at your right hand, but it shall not come near you. Only with your eyes shall you look and see the reward of the wicked. Because you have made the Lord, who is my refuge, even the Most High, your habitation, no evil shall befall you, nor shall any plague come near your dwelling. For he shall give his angels charge over you to keep you in all your ways. They shall bear you up in their hands, lest you dash your foot against a stone. You shall tread upon the lion and the cobra, the young lion and the serpent you shall trample underfoot. Because he has set his love upon me, therefore I will deliver him. I will set him on high because he has known my name. Call upon me and I will answer him. I will be with him in trouble. I will deliver him and honor him. With long life I will satisfy him and show him my salvation. And may the Lord add a blessing to the reading of his beautiful and wonderful word as we all abide in the shadow of the Almighty. Thank you, God. Thank you, God. Thank you, God. And so it is, and so it is, and so it is. Well, good afternoon, all. This is a very special day because we are doing the last book of the Old Testament. And as of next week, we will be moving on to study the New Testament. And so with no further ado, let us begin speaking about the book of Malachi. Now, Malachi, a prophet in the days of Nehemiah, directs his message of judgment to a people plagued with corrupt priests, practices, and a false sense of security in their privileged relationship with God. Sounds familiar. Using the question and answer method, would you please put your phone on mute because there are some background noises that we could do without. So if you're not speaking, please put your phone on mute. Hello? Okay. That's better. Hello? Okay. Using the question and answer method, Malachi probes deeply into the problems of hypocrisy, infidelity, mixed marriages, divorces, false worship and arrogance. So sinful has the nation become that God's words to the people no longer have any impact. For 400 years after Malachi's ringing condemnations, God remains silent. Only with the coming of John the Baptist and Jesus the Christ does God again communicate to his people. And John the Baptist is the prophet whose voice we hear. So I was just going to it's a kind of a review. The people to whom Malachi is speaking is the remnant, the people who have been through the exile, the rebuilding, and the putting together of a new society. Unfortunately, as time progressed, the enthusiasm, the dedication, and the heartfelt worship of the remnant has deteriorated. As I'm seeing, as I look at different stories that we have heard from the prophets that we've read in the Old Testament, it has convinced me that human nature is such that without conscious changing, conscious dealing with spiritual questions from the heart, something happens to all of our spiritual intentions, the world and our activities and so forth can take over, erode the best of intentions and the most devoted intentions and prayers and hopes. Time and the lives that we live can erode those. They must constantly be looked at. They must constantly be part of us, so much so that our hearts and passions are always engaged in our spiritual life. He shows us going to church, doing our ordinary daily spiritual work can become rote and can become almost meaningless. And so therefore, what is called for is another type of consciousness. And he does introduce it. It is going to be the Christ consciousness that will come 400 years after Malachi speaks. Okay, well, anyway, back to Malachi. We'll be talking about that. The meaning of the name Malachi, servant or messenger of Jehovah, is a fitting one, since God's messengers are a major theme in this book. God's messages, I'm sorry, are a major theme in this book. He told his countrymen that the Lord's seeming indifference to them was due to their indifference to him. When we receive no help from God, it is because of our neglect of him. God can do for us only what he can do through us. And if we fail to open ourselves to his good, it appears that he has forsaken us. Prophecies of Haggai and Zephaniah are not yet fulfilled when Malachi is preaching. And the people of Israel have become disillusioned and doubtful. They begin to question God's providence as their faith imperceptibly degenerates into cynicism. Internally, they wonder whether it's worth serving God. After all, externally, These attitudes surface in mechanical observances, empty ritual, cheating in tithes and offerings, and crass indifference to God's moral and ceremonial laws. So I want to just underline those words because they are important words here. Attitudes surface in mechanical observances, empty ritual, cheating in tithes and offering, and crass indifference to God's moral and ceremonial law. Notice that we are not saying that the people of Israel are not doing their religious duties. They are. However, they are not reaping the benefits that they feel that they should reap. And it's because they are spiritually insensitive, and they have imperceptibly fallen into a downward spiral as far as spirituality is concerned, which is just showing us that religious observances are in and of themselves are just that, only religious observances, that we must worship God in spirit and in truth, which has to do with heart. It has to be heartfelt, and that's one of the words that we will be hearing this afternoon. Using a probing series of questions and answers, God seeks to pierce their hearts of stone. In each case, the divine accusations are denied. They ask, how has God loved us? In chapter 1. How have the priests despised God's name? That's in chapter 1 and 2. How have we, the people, profaned the covenant? And that's in chapter 2, 10 to 16. How have we wearied God? Chapter 2 and 3. How have we robbed God? Chapter 3. And how have we spoken against God? Chapter 3. In effect, and as these questions are pursued, the people seem to have the attitude, oh, come now, it's not that bad. However, their rebellion is quiet and not open. As their perception of God grows dim, the resulting materialism and externalism become settled characteristics, so that later grip the religious parties of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. So this ideology of it's not that bad if we do what we're supposed to do ceremonially and religiously, then God is supposed to take good care of us. Those were the attitudes of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. In spite of all this, God still loves his people. And once again, he extends his grace to any who will humbly turn to him. Malachi explores the privilege of the nation, the pollutions of the nation, and the promise to the nations. The last book of the Old Testament concludes with a dramatic prophecy in chapters 3 and 4, and they record the coming of the Messiah, his forerunner, John the Baptist, too. The main subjects of Malachi's message, though, were the love of God, the son of the priests, the sin of the priests and people, judgment for sin and blessings for righteousness. If there is one overarching theme throughout Malachi, it is this. We have a loving, holy God who calls us to sincere worship of him and him alone. He will never excuse our idolatry, not ever, whether it's another physical or emotional God, or it is separation from him. He will not excuse that. The primary error of God's chosen people was idolatry. Worship the one true God and him alone. That is the overarching theme of Malachi. And so we're going to look at the chapters. What is Malachi actually? We're going to look at the text. Website, Truth Unity, the metaphysics of these chapters is not the entire chapter. So what we're going to do is we're going to look at the parts of the chapters that the Fillmore uses for questions. So we may not go through the entire chapter, but we will highlight those parts of the chapter that Fillmore highlights. And so chapters 1 and 2 are going to be talked about by Reverend Mary Lou. And so, Reverend Mary Lou, if you will, go right ahead, chapter 1 and 2.
Oh, thank you, Reverend Ellen. So, let's see, in Malachi, in chapter 1, the first six verses describe the Lord's love for Israel and the people. And then in Truth Unity, the metaphysical meaning we look at is in verses 6 to 9. And I'll just read it from the Good News translation. The Lord reprimands the priest. The Lord Almighty says to priests, children, honor your parents and their parents, and servants, honor their masters. I am your father. Why don't you honor me? I am your master. Why don't you respect me? You despise me, and yet you ask, how have we despised you? This is how, by offering worthless food on my altar. Then you ask, how have we failed to respect you? I tell you, by showing contempt for my altar. When you bring a blind or a sick or a lame animal to sacrifice to me, do you think there's nothing wrong with that? Try giving an animal like that to the governor. Would he be pleased with you or grant you any favors? And then now in verse 9, it says, now you priests, try asking God to be good to us. He will not answer your prayer, and it will be your fault. Now, metaphysically, food is substance, has to do with the substance of the word that's preached to us. It's a deeper meaning. And there's a few questions in Truth Unity. In the age of doubt and questioning, how can service to God be wholehearted service? Now, half-hearted service is service performed with an eye to self-interest. And wholehearted service springs from the heart, from love. Love for God, love for the one served, and love of service itself. Now, what the normal attributes of giving wholehearted service is loyalty and faithfulness. And loyalty and faithfulness are grounded in divine love, which is expressed in divine service. Now, we think of God as our Father because we realize that we could not be thinking, reasoning, and loving creatures but for the fact that we have sprung from a source fitted to impart these traits to us, but from the source, from God. Now, we are true to our spiritual nature. What proof do we have of this in our life? Now, our true spiritual nature, we give out to others of the love and the wisdom in our heart, and our life increases in joy, peace, and abundance. Now, what does it mean to entreat the favor of God? To entreat the favor of God means that we undertake to measure up to the standard of spirit. We do not change God when we beg or entreat the favor of God, since God is absolute impartiality. He is gracious unto us. Because in praying, we enlarge our understanding and our receptivity, and we render ourselves more able to lay hold of the Lord's blessing. We open ourselves to receive the blessings of the Lord. And this is the meaning in chapter 1. And then chapter 2 goes on to talk about the people's unfaithfulness to God. And in verses 13-14, this is another thing you do. You drown the Lord's altar with tears, with weeping and wailing, because he no longer accepts the offerings that you bring. You ask why he no longer accepts them. It is because he knows you have broken your promise to be the wife you married when you were young. She was your partner, and you have broken your promise to her. Although you promised before God that you would be faithful to her. Now, metaphysically, the wife in these verses has to do with the unity within the I am, within the Christ consciousness. And the divorce is not being with the I am consciousness, is as the metaphysical meaning of divorce, that you are not in alignment with your Christ consciousness. And the corruption of the priesthood, because the priests are only half-hearted of service to the Lord and to his neighbors, to his Israelites, and the divorce is the half-heartedness. Now, also in the truth unity in the question, it says, "Do tears, weeping, and sighing advance us in spiritual understanding and accomplishment?" Now, in this case, it says no. When we waste our spiritual substance in grief or lamentation, then we retard our spiritual growth. Joy and gladness accomplish for us what grief and tears cannot. And this is in relation to the people's unfaithfulness to God. And then the next question comes from Malachi chapter 2, but a different verse, verse 10. And I'll just read the verse from Good News Translation. "Don't we all have the same Father? Didn't the same God create us all? Then why do we break our promises to one another? And why do we despise the covenant that God made with our ancestors. Now, the question from Truth Unity, what does "in one God" imply? Now, belief in one God, this implies the brotherhood of man, since all men are children of the one Father God. And that's why we need to love each other and care for each other. And then what does the brotherhood of man presuppose? Now, universal love and cooperation, caring, for one man to deal treacherously against another is to profane the covenant of our fathers, quote, which is to love our brother, our neighbor, as ourself. So that's what Malachi is teaching and preaching to the Israelite people, to love one another and to love God wholeheartedly with being in service with gladness and joy. So thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for introducing that. Are there a couple of items in chapters 1 and 2 that I just want to speak about, especially since most of us who listen in on this program and participate are ordained ministers and teachers? I want to look at this idea of defiled food. Malachi is speaking to the priest, the high priest of the people, and he is accusing them of putting defiled food on the altar, of using animals that are lame or blind or sick for sacrifices, and those things are certainly out of line with the laws that the people have been given by Jehovah himself. And so I just wanted to make some comments about that and the symbolism of that. One of the commentators wrote some of these items. Actually, the priests are supposed to be the people who are teaching the law and the scriptures to the people. As you mentioned, Mary Lou, food represents, or metaphysically, is about the deeper truths that require much study, meditation, prayer, and concentration, that they may be appropriated and assimilated by the mind. And the priests offer us this information for us to incorporate in our spiritual selves. And if the spiritual food include the thoughts and words of truth, the word of God, if when he's speaking of them being defiled, he's speaking this way. And these are a few of the items that I found about this defiled food. It has to do with the sermons and the teachings of the priests. Perhaps they throw a few Bible verses here and there to illustrate or back up the preacher's stories. But to really make the sermon all about the preacher is to offer defiled food. If the sermon isn't about God's word, then the preacher is setting defiled food on God's altar. If the preacher's sermon is cold, refusing to show any concern or passion in the pulpit, if his passion is reserved for the things of life and materialism, etc., then the sermon can be likened to defiled food. So the service to God in the teachings or in the teaching is half-hearted. And that is what we need to be aware of, because for us who lead congregations and us who work with the Word of God, we have to be sure that we are doing it from our heart and that it is not half-hearted. So that was one thing about the food. Yes, Malachi does says, you offer defiled food on my altar. So many ministers of the gospel, we know, are not fully devoted to God. And every time we speak, we are supposed to be, what we say and how we say it is supposed to give honor to God. In the second chapter, as he's speaking about the divorce and marriage to someone who is not of the same persuasion, it's an important piece too, because this is really a metaphor for idolatry. Actually, taking a wife represents the unification of the I am of us, the Christ consciousness of us, and our true selves, our affection. And the divorce is when we have taken in some other ideas into our affection, into our really caring self. And we are separated from God. We do not consider that separation from God, the separation from our Christ consciousness, the ignoring of all of the heartfelt attachment to God that we're supposed to have. The prophet here is calling it idolatry. We have to always maintain 24/7, the Father and I are one. In all we think, say, and do, the Father and I are one. And that is what chapter Malachi 2 is about. Okay, Malachi 3 moves on, and the Fillmore website, it only is involving itself with verses 1 through 7. And in chapter 3, we do have the words about the coming messenger. We do have some words on do not rob God. And the end of the chapter 3 tells us about the reward of the faithful. So what is understood by my messenger who shall prepare the way before the Lord? He does speak of the coming messenger. Malachi, who is the messenger right here, is not strictly speaking a proper name. Malachi represents intellectual perception, which prepares the way for the coming of spiritual perception, the understanding of spiritual truth. To understand spiritual truth, one must have a quickened consciousness represented by Malachi, the messenger. Fillmore asked this question. Must intellectual perception be developed over a long period of time before spiritual perception can dawn on the mind? No. The two come about almost simultaneously. John the Baptist, representing the intellectual perception, was the forerunner of Jesus Christ, but the two were contemporaries. The work of John was begun only a short time before that of Jesus, and the two ministries overlapped. Malachi does give a great deal of time to the coming Messiah. Fillmore asked the question, the coming of the Messiah is the epitome of spiritual perfection, spiritual perception. As a matter of fact, Jesus the Christ coming is the thing that gives an injection of energy, spiritual energy, into our spiritual growth process. So literally and figuratively, Jesus had to come to bring that injection of energy into the people of Israel and into us as we accept Jesus as way shower, guide. We are injected with that energy to pursue the path of regeneration. And so this Messiah, whose forerunner was John the Baptist, is mentioned here, but we are in the process, some of us further along on the path than others, but we're in the process of a regeneration process. And Jesus, the Christ consciousness, the I Am, is the energy that we need to keep on pursuing spiritual perceptions. So Fillmore asks, perception comes suddenly or gradually? And as I said, it may come either way. If suddenly, there's a verse in chapter 3, the Lord whom ye seek will suddenly come to his temple, and that's referring to Jesus the Christ. The mind suddenly catches a glimpse of truth, and the person for an instant sees himself as he is in the sight of God and as he was meant to be in actuality. We realize that our nature is akin to the divine. The Lord is the divine spirit that comes into conscious possession of our body, so that when this Messiah, when this Christ presence, when our Christ consciousness comes fully alive, glimpse of the truth, and we see ourselves as we truly are in the sight of God, and as we really are. So that this coming of Messiah, this coming of the Christ consciousness, this living with the Christ consciousness, is a very, very beautiful thing. And as he says, it can come gradually or it can come suddenly. The next question is, what is the important thing in spiritual perception? That it be developed practically without delay to allow the law of increase to become operative. Unused understanding held in the mind grows latent and tends to drop out of consciousness altogether. Light is to show us the way we are to go. Now, that's one of the reasons, too, that the people of Israel to whom Malachi is speaking in the state that they're in, because they have allowed, they have delayed their growth. They are stuck in a particular space. And as it says, if we do not use what our understanding, that we'll lose the understanding. And so that is what has happened to the people of Israel. And so Jesus the Christ, that Christ consciousness, has got to come to inspire and to energize the people of Israel. Why is the ideal of the Christ compared in its action to a refiner's fire? In chapter 3, it is written, for he is like a refiner's fire. That is the Messiah, the energy of the Messiah. The Christ ideal removes all sense concepts of life, leaving truth revealed in its purity, as soap removes soil from clothing, and as fire removes the dross from silver. The ideal of perfection cleanses the mind of imperfection. And so this coming of the Christ, this coming of Messiah is the thing that will bring the silver in us, the gold in us out, so that that can shine and that can be there. One of the lines in chapter 3 is, he will purify the sons of Levi. What is the meaning of this prophecy? The sons of Levi are the natural religious tendencies of the soul, not necessarily spiritual. The name Levi represents love, but love may remain on the physical or emotional level instead of rising to the spiritual. When the Christ ideal enters into the soul's natural religious tendencies, it refines or spiritualizes them until they rightly express the relationship of man to God. And that is where, that is part of our process. When the Christ ideal enters into the soul's natural religious tendencies, it refines or spiritualizes them until they rightly express the relationship of man to God. And that is what we are about, the right expression of the right relationship of man to God. Is the creative power of the spoken word always sufficient to fulfill it? As we know, so once the word is spoken, it is going to be fulfilled. When the word is spoken in the creative consciousness, it is fulfilled, unless it is counteracted by other words that neutralize it. So we have to be careful of our word. Be sure that we do not say words that counteract our truth, and be sure we do not think negative thoughts and speak positive words and think negative thoughts, because then our spoken word certainly is not fulfilled. And that's a question for a whole weekend for us to get together. Well, maybe we'll do that. Can we influence the course of future events by intelligent handling of the causes in which they originate? So the question is asking, can we control there's cause and effect. Can we control the effect by working with the cause? Yes, we can. For example, by educating the youth of the land to a consciousness of peace and international understanding and friendship, we can contribute to the future peace of the world and can foresee what the course of events will be. And how can we express the divine nature on a worldwide scale? By developing and expressing unerring judgment of the truth in local, national, and international matters. I quote from Malachi, I will come near to you by judgment. The commandment, judge not, ye be not judged, refers to condemnation and adverse criticism, and so not to the exercise of reasoned judgment. And so we can criticize, and we can offer constructive criticism. We can point out what is incorrect, but we must use good judgment in this. And so right here, right now in our country, we have a lot of division and we have a lot of questions of which people are taking drastic sides and have no way of bridging the gaps that are being caused by people taking drastic sides. So I would say, as far as this question is concerned, it's a very important question for us today, and it was a question for them at that time also. Chapter 4 moves on. Chapter 4 is a very marvelous one because it tells about what's going to happen when Jesus comes. One of the interesting things about this, too, is it is addressed to all humankind. Toward the close of the book, it becomes clear that God is also speaking to all of humankind. Although the passage is often assumed to be describing an apocalyptic time of final judgment, because many Christians do interpret this fourth book as an apocalyptic time of final judgment and the end of our human experience, that's not really what it says. It is really a positive statement that although our challenges will be severe, righteousness shall rise with healing in its wings, and the triumph of good will happen, not in a distant heaven, but right here on earth. It will be the new consciousness that the Christ will later describe as the kingdom of heaven. Our human experience will not end. It will be transformed. Jesus points out that the required shift in consciousness will split families and turn parents against children. The promise of this passage is that beyond that time of upheaval and discord lies a great healing that will restore us to an energy of love and allow our spiritual path and purpose to continue to unfold. And so chapter 4 really tells us that the beloved community is a possibility, not just a possibility. It is an assurance that after all of the stuff goes down and things happen, there will be this beautiful and wonderful place that we can live in the flesh. It is. And so, therefore, here we go. We will be going into the New Testament, and we will be working through that, and we will really learn about the Christ and what it means to have the Christ consciousness. For most of us who are listening, we do work with the Christ consciousness, certainly. However, there's always much to learn. So I'm looking forward to going into it, knowing what we know, going into it and finding out what I can add and how I can add this to make that Christ consciousness completely fill me spiritually, mentally, emotionally, etc. I'm looking forward to that. And so we've come to the end of the Old Testament, and Malachi most certainly is, he's considered to be one of the minor prophets, but his message is not minor. His message is a very important message. And I hope that you have gotten something out of this, too, to show his importance. And so it is. So if anyone has a comment or question, it's the time for us to do it now. Let's do it.
Is that
Elva?
Yeah.
Go right ahead, Elva.
Okay, this is about discernment. I mean, you spoke on that when you talked about judgment. That's discernment. And here we have, you know, God and man, you know, the people against God. And what is beyond this judgment thing, especially when you're criticizing and condemning another, is love. And so I see the 12 powers in these chapters also, love and discernment. And then it also talks about silver and gold, going to silver and gold. I don't recall exactly what you said about the silver and gold.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember what you said about silver and gold?
Yes, it was referring to the verse in chapter 3 about describing Jesus, that the Messiah.
Mm-hmm.
For he is like a refiner's fire. And Jesus' energy is going to be so fabulous that it's going to be like a refiner. And they mentioned that silver, when silver is refined, they put it in the fire. The fire burns all of the dross off the silver. And you get the metal coming forth without all of the junk around it. And so they say that Jesus is like a refiner's fire.
And you come forth. And like the song.
You're going to come. I was just thinking that, and I mixed it up with the song. You know, I'm going to come forth as pure gold. When God is through with me, I will come forth as pure gold.
The gold is actually gold. If you think back when we did our 12 powers, the gold represents understanding.
Okay.
So this is where we're going to come to. It's a period of discernment there, where they know that God is not doing what's happening to them. God is just loving. That's all.
Yes.
God is not either criticizing, condemning, judging. God is just love.
Yes.
And so. But in order to really get it, you got to have this understanding. And then it talks about silver. And then the silver represents the will. So we got to be willing, when we get that spiritual stuff, like the priest didn't get it, because priests typically they were just there in the temple to take care of the temple, more or less. And they were not spiritual. They were just religiously doing, they came every day and they changed the tables or cleaned the tables or whatever they did there. That's what the priests did. But they were not spiritually inclined. They were more or less religiously inclined. And that's what I got from that. They just did it rote. You know, we do this.
Yeah.
So it compares to the priest to the prophet, and then the people against God, people versus God, the people there, they were still judging. In other words, God is not loving us enough. That's why things are happening to us. And so, that's kind of what I got out of it. Malachi, it's coming down to getting that understanding. And we've been told before, we perish because of lack of knowledge. This is what happened. The people still, perishing, what's going on here? Because that knowledge, they're not understanding that knowledge they have.
Well, in this book, they're not being given the knowledge that they should have. And therefore, the little that they have is being eroded by everyday life and concerns and so forth. So the priests then, who are supposed to be giving them the knowledge, are falling down on their job, and the people are falling down on what they know because they're allowing the life to take their energies and so forth in other places. And I see it as such a human quest, such a human thing, that I realize why Jesus the Christ has to come.
Yes. The priests, they were saying things, but then they were doing something else.
Yes. And they were not even doing their real job right. Those sacrificial laws in the Old Testament that were given to Moses, they're very explicit about the animals that you should use and how they should look and the food offerings and all that. They're very explicit, so that the priests were not even observing those laws. They were just putting any old thing up there on the altar. You know, they were using any old thing. They were laying down on the actual job they were supposed to be doing, which means metaphysically that the spiritual ideas that we're supposed to be dealing with on a daily basis are becoming, we're becoming slack on those.
Yeah, we have these false idols, you know.
We talk about
them taking wives, you know.
Yes.
You know, getting into a relationship with these foreign things.
Yes.
Not the things of God, but
yes,
these other things. And so, yeah, it talks about that.
Yes.
You know, the wife or the marriage is, you know, your relationship with God.
Yes, absolutely.
So these other, these foreign women or wives of this women, the woman represents the emotion in us.
Yes.
So they got all of that mixed up, the emotions with the knowledge, and it's not aligning with Christ consciousness. And so this is where they are. And this, like you said, you know, once you come into that knowledge of the Christ, or you have that enlightenment from the Christ, that light coming in through the crown of the head or wherever, and you are being enlightened, then you know. You know the truth. And that truth is what frees you from all of that bondage of false beliefs and that feeling of separation and that feeling that, you know, there's, you know, something in the world better than, this stuff in the world is better than, you know, the stuff that the spirit is offering, this stuff within, in other words, that outer stuff is better than this stuff in, that is within us, the truth. Yeah.
Yes, yes,
so that's
yes.
Kind of what I get out of it. Yeah. So thank you both, Reverend.
Okay, you know what? It makes me truly look forward to the study of the Christ, because this is a time when, personally, I have never been at this particular place spiritually.
Yeah.
So that what I'm looking forward to in studying the New Testament is more than just information, because most of us have the information anyway. You know, we have the information on Jesus. And the people that we're speaking to, most of us, that we know the miracles and we know the events and we know the words and all that. So that I'm glad of that, because therefore we don't have to really read it like we're reading a novel or a textbook. But there are things in it that I have not ever been ready to tackle. And I feel I'm ready to tackle stuff about the Christ that I have never tackled before.
So we're ready for Christmas.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Christ will be born in us.
Yeah,
the
we're ready for Christmas.
Yeah, this is what the New Testament is about.
That's right. Well, I mean, it begins with the begats, right? And then it goes right into the Christmas
the
story.
The birth of Christ. That Christ born us in our consciousness. So
in our consciousness.
Now. We're
Christ born in our consciousness, and what that really means.
And we just went through the crucifixion, so we supposedly we crossed out all of that false belief and all of that stuff, and we now know the truth, and the truth is the Christ, the I am. So
it sure is.
it's a cycle. We're going to go through rebirthing now. And that's what Easter is all about, letting that old part of us die out and let the new come forth, the new Christ part of us come forth. And so we're ready for the birth.
Yes.
Yes.
Start next week with the birth.
We will do that. The new consciousness, the Christ consciousness. And this is going to be some serious study.
Born in us.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Christmas. I'm writing this down.
Coming through represents love.
So may I make a comment?
Oh, you may, of course.
I get out of listening to what I heard, that it's a call for us to level up what we call the Christ consciousness and to embrace wisdom.
Okay.
The understanding that's behind the principle, behind the laws, behind the understanding, that wisdom. So that's what I get out of Malachi. It's a call to open to wisdom.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And wisdom is one of the 12 powers, too, called judgment, right? Of course, sometimes we call it judgment.
It's more than judgment. It's actually, because we get judgment in our everyday life and can apply it very, very practically there as well. But wisdom is also a spiritual principle at the Christ consciousness level, where as a priest, you're not probably going to be deciding or judging between apples and oranges, which is important. I'm not putting it down, but there are some other decisions that we make every day as priests and priestesses of life. At that higher level of Christ consciousness, and that's where wisdom comes in. In fact, when I think about it, love has been given so much power by writers, by people who understand about the principles and all that. But we do a lot of things in the name of love that are not exactly wise. So there has to be a marriage between the two, and wisdom actually, with a love without wisdom, is much more dangerous than love without wisdom is much more dangerous than wisdom without love.
Absolutely, and I don't want to. I'm sure that I'm laughing because I think we could give some examples.
Absolutely, right about that. I think Malachi, the last book, is really powerful because
it is.
For me, what's going on when I think about up-leveling my understanding or my wisdom around the Christ concept, it's just that. It's not knowing what happened. It's not understanding what other people say. It's getting behind what he actually did, the life he actually lived, and what was left as a legacy. Getting behind that and looking at it from the Christ consciousness level, not Jesus level, but the Christ consciousness level. And so this is a wonderful opening to that kind of activity. Thank you.
You're welcome.
What I'm seeing is in Revelation, it says it talks about the last judgment. And I think that's what Judith is saying. Going beyond this judgment thing, that's the last of judgment. We don't have to go into that anymore.
Okay.
We do, but we don't have to. We don't have to handle it at the human level. We don't have to handle it. We no longer have to handle it at the human level.
Once we can conquer this, that's the last judgment. We don't have to judge anymore. We don't have to condemn. And that one writer.
Oh, that kind of judgment. I get you. Yeah, I hear what you're saying.
Yeah, that's beyond judgment. That's the last judgment, you know.
Like the criticism, the judgment that criticizes and condemns and all that kind of stuff.
Yes.
You mean?
Right.
Okay.
And see, judgment, at the root of judgment is love, even though, you know, we just said, you know, love is powerful. You can misuse it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Misuse.
Yes,
that's what we call righteous judgment.
Right, right. So we can misuse
right use of judgment, yeah.
Yeah, we get to the point where we stop misusing it. We stop abusing ourselves. And this is what I saw the people in Malachi saying, you know, hey, this is not working because they have been misusing their judgment, their discernment. Mm. Yeah. And so we get to that point of the last judgment where there's nothing but just pure love, that unconditional love.
One of the misuses of judgment, and they talk about criticism and condemnation, is just that.
Yeah,
there is no condemnation.
No.
Every person can accept God's love and God's forgiveness for everything. There is nothing beyond God's forgiveness. So therefore, well, as far as I'm concerned, if you are not forgiven in this life, you're going to have another chance to get forgiven, because I believe that that everyone will be saved, so-called. And so there is no room for condemnation and criticism. However, one of the things that it did say is that good judgment, there is such a thing as good judgment, so that you can look at something from the point of view that I'm not even sure. I'm grappling with the question, by the way.
Yeah,
I'm grappling with that.
I think the Bible refers to it as righteous judgment.
Okay. All right. Because we're not supposed to just ignore everything.
Mm-hmm. No. Righteous
we're not supposed to just ignore everything. We are supposed to look at things from a point of view of the word you use, discernment, to
love.
See it as it truly is, and to view it. I have to work on this because
what I hear is that first of all, I'm coming, and everybody's different, but I know that I'm coming from the. So I'm kind of like a take on there's nothing to be healed, only God to be revealed.
Okay.
So if I take that into judgment,
yes.
There's no right, there's no wrong.
Okay.
There is what moves me closer to my true Christ self and what moves me personally away from it. So I make those judgments, so to speak, righteously on what moves me to my higher Christ consciousness and what moves me away from it. And that includes my interactions with other people as well. I'm not judging them as much as I am judging the appropriateness for my involvement in what they are doing. So that for me, that's the distinction. The judgment is not over there. It's a distinction over here. And it's not right or wrong. It's appropriate for where I say I'm going toward into my higher Christ consciousness, who I say I am, you know, not Jesus, but Jesus the Christ becoming. So you know, looking at it from that perspective, it takes out the valuation, and the criticism doesn't exist there. It either is or it isn't, because in reality, all of that stuff is not real anyway.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
But this is where God comes in, because Eric Butterworth said,
God's in it all.
But I mean, but this is the point where you really see God. God, he says that God does not love, God does not condemn, God does not judge, and God does not love us. So when we get to that point, it's like the priest that they talked about here, where the priest is there, you know, working with the hands and the, you know, and all of that, but they're not putting love into what they're doing. So it's
that separation where it's only love.
If I bring that into my personal self, the priestess in me, how am I moving through this experience of life? You know, because, you know, there's a level of, let's say, ministry into modern times. There's a level of ministry that when you go into the church, you make sure that the pulpit is correct, flowers are in place, every seat has a fan or whatever that is. You take care of the administrative and the atmospheric conditions for worship. And then there's the ministry that comes in and actually performs the worship, that actually calls in the Spirit of God, that actually is an enactment of Holy Spirit moving in through our lives. So each one of those is a different role to play.
Yeah.
And love is in it all. Love is in it all, except when love is not in it all. And that's me. That's not the priest out there. It's the priest in here.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, it's actually as one as doing and the other one as being.
But they're both legitimate, and they're both worthy in the eyes of God.
Yeah. One is doing, the other one is being. And you have to go from that doing to that being.
You don't have to. There actually is a level of serving that is doing. To get to doing, you have to be at some level. As a priest, to get to doing, you are already being it, and this is how it is showing up through your doing. If you're doing. Now, if you're not doing, then I got to look at myself a different kind of way. But if I'm actually engaged in the doing of work in ministry, then the beingness is already in there somewhere.
Okay.
It takes on a different level of understanding for me when I pull the scriptures out of the book and apply it to my personal experience. And then it takes on a different level because I have to really think, how is this acting and interacting with not only what I know, but what I more than know, what's there for me behind that knowing? What is that spiritual level of understanding within the Christ mind that allows me to see behind the knowing to what this is really saying for my life?
Yeah.
So that's wisdom. To me, that's wisdom.
And the being, you know, like when it comes to love, you can't do love, but you can be love. I can be the love I am, but I can't do the love I can, you know, like, you know, maybe, you know, buying somebody a gift or something like that. That's doing, but being is just doing it, you know, being it from my heart, a heart thing.
Well, we just have a difference of opinion. I think. I think if I spend my money and buy you a gift, I am very loving.
I agree with that.
First time to give you these flowers, girl. I love you.
I got to agree with that, Judith. I agree.
Yeah. But I get what you're saying. To be more involved. Yeah, totally involved.
I agree.
Being instead of doing, because for me, I can't do love. I can buy you, you know, I can give you the world. But if it's not in my heart, then, you know, it's not worth anything as far as I'm concerned.
I understand that. Well, we are going to be able to get into a whole... I mean, like, this whole New Testament thing is just amazing because it's going to take us through so many of these questions. And it's going to be very, 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 very enlightening. And so I think that this is such a beautiful place to be, as Elvis told us. We came through the crucifixion. All the errors have been crossed out. And a new consciousness is in every single one of us, that Christ consciousness.
There's been an arising. There's been an upheavaling.
Yes.
Up-leveling as well. Obstacles and pushback. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes.
And I want to say Merry Christmas. I'm going to say it again next week. See, you got me, Elvis. The birth of Christ in each of us. Yes. And so we are going off on our study. It's going to be beautiful, just beautiful.
Yeah.
Looking forward to it. So I'm looking at my time here. We're over time, but they didn't play the music yet and everything, so I guess we could continue talking until they play the music, right? or somebody gets tired or has to go pick up the kids or something like that.
Right. I would just like to entertain within myself this week. What would it mean if the Christ is already born in me? Then what is this next Christmas coming? Already born in me. What is? I just want to play with it for my whole heart and mind.
I know that just going through the story of the stories, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and their differences, there will be an increase in knowledge and understanding and growth and expression. And I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, that's a great thing.
I'm looking forward to it. Yes. I am. I'm really looking forward to it. So anyway, that's what we hope anyway will happen.
It's
that we'll be growing.
It's growing and changing. We're going to catch up with it.
Oh, my goodness, yes. And, and different people are on different levels, So who can say? But wherever we are, we will be able to grow from that. And we will see what happens. Looking forward to it. So anyway, it is 12. It's what time you all got? 2:20?
Yes.
2:20?
Nation time.
Nation time. Please. I tell
you.
You
all be safe up there with that earthquake.
Yes.
Have a good weekend, everybody.
Okay, Elva. God bless. We say our prayer of protection. We all need it. The light of God surrounds us.
The power of God.
And the presence of God
watches over us.
Wherever we are, God is. And we go in peace and walk with the Master. So until next week, God bless. Thanks so much. Thank you. Take care.
Bye-bye. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.